Mysterious disappearance of woman from train. The fate of Miss Lucy Woodward, daughter of prominent Eagle County farmer Charles Woodward, is still unknown. The porter on the Pueblo Special noticed she was missing shortly before the train reached the Canyon City Station. He reported her disappearance to the conductor, Miles Murtaugh, and a search of the train was conducted, but to no avail. Subsequently, a note was discovered which leads the sheriff's department to believe the woman was snatched from the train, though nobody remembers seeing the event actually happen. The local train agent reports the note, which demands a $5,000 ransom, has been turned over to the sheriff.
Malcolm was sitting on a chair on the front porch of Woodward's house. Charles Woodward sat across from him. Sue Woodward was in the house, taken to bed with worry over her daughter.
Sheriff Carson said the train only stopped twice between here and Canyon City. Once for water and once at Buena Vista.
Did anyone notice her at either of those stops?
Well, they don't know if she was on the train at Buena Vista or not. Nobody noticed she was missing until shortly before the train reached Canyon City.
It seems unlikely anyone could have taken her off forcefully without being seen.
But I don't think Lucy would have left the train on her own.
She might have, if she was convinced to.
How could someone convince her to leave the train in the middle of the night?
If she thought something had happened to either you or Mrs. Woodward, perhaps.
Yeah, I see what you mean. That's possible, I suppose. Did you see in the paper that the Frenchman is offering a reward for her safe return?
I saw it. I don't believe it.
I don't know. Maybe he realizes he's gotten off on the wrong foot with everyone, and he's trying to make up. After all, nobody would want all of his neighbors hating him, would they?
I'm still mighty suspicious. Who's that coming up your drive?
Woodward squinted as he stared at a man approaching in a buggy.
I don't know. It's too far away to... No, wait. There's only one man I know who takes up an entire seat of a buggy. That has to be Robert Dempster.
Who?
Robert Dempster. He's a lawyer in town. I wonder what he wants.
Maybe it has something to do with Lucy.
Woodward and Malcolm hadn't seen Sue come out onto the porch. Woodward reached over to take his wife's hand.
Don't get all worked up over it one way or the other. Let's find out what this is about.
Malcolm went down the steps and Dempster halted the horse, then handed the reins to him. Malcolm tied the reins around a hitching post. Dempster was sweating profusely and held a handkerchief to his face as he climbed the steps to the porch.
Can I help you, Mr. Dempster?
Actually, Mr. Woodward, I rather hope that I can help you. It is in regards to your daughter.
What about Lucy? Do you know where she is?
Oh, no. I am sorry if I've given you the wrong impression. I don't know where she is. But I may be in a position to facilitate her safe return.
What do you mean you can facilitate her safe return?
The amount of ransom being asked is $5,000. Do you have $5,000, Mr. Woodward?
Mr. Dempster, what does it matter to you whether I have $5,000 or not?
Well, because I told you I may be in a position to help you. You see, Mr. Woodward, my office has been contacted by the person or persons who took your daughter. They have asked me to act as the agent in negotiations between you and them.
Where is Lucy? You tell me where she is.
Now, easy, Mr. Woodward. I don't know where she is. As I told you, they contacted me and asked me to be the go-between.
How do you know they have her?
Well, sir, they sent me something to give you. Something they said would prove that they have her.
What is it?
This.
Dempster took an ivory cameo brooch from his pocket and he showed it to him.
Give that to me.
Woodward grabbed the brooch.
Is that Lucy's brooch?
Yes. It's her mother's brooch, but she was wearing it for her trip to Atlanta.
Sue reached for the brooch, then clasped it in her hands.
Mr. Woodward, I'll ask you again. Do you have $5,000?
No, God in heaven, I don't have it.
Oh, dear, that's too bad.
Too bad? What do you mean, too bad? Are you saying they're gonna...
It is my opinion, sir, that they want the money. They do not want to hurt the girl. Now, all you have to do is come up with $5,000. They'll release her unharmed.
Where am I going to get that kind of money?
I'll tell you what, sir. I don't want to see this innocent girl hurt any more than you do. I don't believe it's just by chance that they chose me as the agent between you and them. I can't promise you anything, sir. But it just may be that I will be able to arrange the money for you.
How?
Well, now you just let me work on that. I'll be back tomorrow with a proposal that just might work.
Oh, bless you, Mr. Dempster. Bless you.
Now, don't despair, Mrs. Woodward. I'm almost certain that I can work something out.
Dempster walked back down the steps and climbed into the straining buggy as Malcolm unhitched it.
Giddy up!
I wonder what he means by saying he'll work something out.
I don't know, but I do know he's a pretty smart lawyer. You ask anyone in town and they'll tell you Dempster's a smart lawyer.
Yes, that's what bothers me.
Smoke was standing on his porch when he saw Malcolm come riding up.
Hello, Malcolm. Come on in.
Malcolm followed Smoke inside.
Hello, Malcolm. Can I get you a cup of coffee?
Yes, please. I just came from Mr. and Mrs. Woodward's place.
How are they doing?
They're both very frightened. To tell the truth, I'm also frightened.
Have you heard anything else from whoever took Lucy?
Yes, that's why I've come to see you.
Here you are.
Thank you.
What have they heard?
Well, nothing directly, but they have heard indirectly. By that, I mean Mr. Dempster drove out to speak with them. He said the people who took Lucy have gotten in touch with him and asked him to be an agent between them and the Woodwards.
Were you there when he came to see them?
Yes, I was visiting with Mr. Woodward. The truth is, Smoke, I have a personal reason for wanting Lucy back safe and sound.
Malcolm, I don't think there's a man in the whole county who doesn't know about that personal reason.
Oh! Well, then you can see why this has me about as anxious as the Woodwards are.
Did you believe Dempster when he said that he'd been contacted?
Oh, yes. He'd been contacted, all right. There's not the slightest doubt about that.
Really? Why do you say that?
Because he gave Mr. Woodward an ivory brooch Lucy was wearing.
That sounds like proof enough. Did he have anything new to add?
Well, not about Lucy. I mean, not about where she was or how she was doing. He says they want $5,000, just like the ransom note said.
And he's supposed to transfer the money?
I don't know. He didn't say. But here's something strange that he did say. When Mr. Woodward told him he didn't have $5,000, Mr. Dempster said he would come back tomorrow with a way that Mr. Woodward could get the money.
Did he?
Yes, sir.
Now that's interesting. In fact, that's very interesting. Suppose you and I go over to Woodward's farm and be there when Mr. Dempster returns tomorrow.
I was hoping you would suggest that.
A few days after their initial meeting, Inspector Laurent stood in Captain Hagerdorn's office.
You said you had something that I might find interesting, Capitan.
Yep.
Do you have him?
No, but I know where he is.
Please, monsieur, I beg of you, arrest him.
Oh, I can't do that, Inspector. He isn't in my jurisdiction. In fact, he isn't even in New York. But I can show you where he is, and you can go make your case with the local authorities.
Where is he?
Take a look at this, Inspector.
Captain Hagerdorn opened the New York Times and laid it before him.
This is an article the Times picked up from the Associated Press. It has the name of the man you're looking for.
Hagerdorn put his finger on an article.
Gun battle at Logan's Ranch, Big Rock, Colorado, AP, from the Big Rock Journal. On Thursday previous, several mounted gunmen attacked Chris Logan and some of his neighbors at Mr. Logan's ranch. Longtime residents of Eagle and Pitkin counties will recognize that Logan's ranch is near Carro de Bancada, which once belonged to the late Mr. Humboldt Puddle. They will also remember that Humboldt Puddle was killed in an occasion similar to the most recent gunfight. Colonel the Marquis Lucien Garneau, owner of Long Trek Ranch, suggests the assailants were cattle rustlers with the intention of stealing Chris Logan's entire herd. He stated, "This validates the concern I expressed to the Cattlemen's Association recently when I explained my reason for hiring skilled gunmen who could provide protection not only for my cattle, but for the cattle of my neighbors, such as Chris Logan."
Oui, yes. This must be Mouchette. It can be no other. Where is this place, this Big Rock, Colorado?
Come over here to the map, I'll show you.
Laurent followed Hagedorn to the wall where there was a large map of the United States.
Here's New York, where you are now, and way over here is Colorado.
Mon Dieu, that is a long way.
Yeah, it is, but we have trains that go there, and, you know, you can get there in less than a week. You aren't gonna let a little thing like a long trip get in your way, are you?
No, monsieur. If Mouchette is in a place called Big Rock, Colorado, then that is where I shall go.
Lucy had been in the small cabin for 2 days now, tied up the entire time. Her back and legs were cramped, and her wrists were raw from the rubbing of the ropes.
How long are you going to keep me here?
We're going to keep you here until your papa pays us $5,000.
My father is not a wealthy man. There's no way he can raise that much money.
If he wants to get you back in one piece, he'll raise the money.
You hungry? Want something to eat?
No, thank you.
Come on, take a hunk of bread at least.
I don't want it. I would like a drink of water, though.
You gotta eat something. It's been 2 days and you ain't eaten anything. All you've done is drink water. Maybe you'd like something to drink other than water? You want some whiskey?
No.
Oh, come on. It'll make you feel better.
Please, no.
Leave her alone if she don't want it. It don't make no sense trying to give whiskey to someone who don't want it. You'll just be wasting good whiskey.
Why won't you eat something?
Lucy didn't answer.
Miss, we're just trying to be nice to you. I don't really care whether you drink whiskey or not, and that's the truth of it.
Nice to me? You haul me off the train by telling me a lie about my mother, and then you bring me here and tie me up, but you say you're being nice to me?
Miss, maybe you don't know what sometimes happens to women when they get took.
Don't be threatening her with that. The Colonel was real particular about that.
The Colonel? Who is the Colonel?
You got a big mouth, Briggs.
Hell, you heard her. She don't have no idea who he is.
Just don't say nothing about him no more.
Smoke, Pearly, and Cal were waiting on a road about a mile east of the farm of Charles Woodward. They were expecting Dempster to call on Woodward.
Don't stop him. Don't let him see you follow him. I just want to know where he goes after he leaves Woodward's farm.
All right. What if he leads us to the girl? Can we rescue her?
I don't think he'll be going to the girl. But if he does, and you see the opportunity to rescue her without getting her hurt, of course you can do it.
Oh, I bet she'd give me a dance at the next shindig if I did that.
If she did, it'd only be the one dance to thank you. Everybody knows she has her cap set for Malcolm.
Yeah, well, all I want is one dance anyway.
You two get over there on the other side of that ridge line. When he leaves, this is the way he'll go. And if I have this figured correctly, when he gets to the T in the road, he'll turn left.
Left? Town is to the right.
Uh-huh.
Long Trek's to the left. You're thinking the Frenchman's behind this, aren't you?
That's exactly what I'm thinking. And today, we're going to call his bluff.
Smoke, you don't really think the Frenchman is that evil, do you?
I don't think it's a coincidence that someone has tried twice to kill me, and someone has tried to kill you two. I think the Frenchman believes that if he can get us out of the way, he'll have a clear track to owning the entire valley.
Yeah? Oh, well, he don't know Miss Sally, does he? He might kill you, but he would still have Miss Sally to contend with.
Well, now, Cal, that's mighty comforting.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Cal, quit while you're ahead. What'd I say? I see dust way up the road. I bet that's him.
I'm sure it is. I'm going on up to the house. You boys get out of sight.
Smoke sat his horse until he saw that Pearly and Cal were well out of sight. Then he rode on the rest of the way to Woodward's farm. Woodward and Malcolm were sitting in chairs on the front porch. Because they were expecting Smoke, there was a third chair on the porch, empty and waiting for him.
Is he coming?
I saw someone coming up the road. I didn't wait around long enough to see who it is, but I'm sure it's Dempster. Have you got the money with you?
Yes, sir. And I can't thank you enough. But I have to be honest with you, Smoke. I don't know how, when, or even if I can ever pay you back.
I'll pay him back, Mr. Woodward. I can borrow enough money against my ranch to do that.
Neither one of you will have to pay me back. I'm pretty sure I'll be able to get it back on my own.
Looking up the road, they could see dust roiling up, though as yet they couldn't see the buggy. Then, a moment later, the buggy came into view, and they watched as Dempster drove all the way up to the porch.
Whoa!
He sat there for a moment as the dust cloud rolled over him, but he didn't bother to climb down from the buggy.
Well, I've got good news for you, Mr. Woodward. Very good news.
Mr. Dempster, the only good news you can have for me is that my daughter has been found and is safe.
Well, now, sir, it unfortunately hasn't advanced that far yet. But I am reasonably certain we aren't far from a successful end to this terrible ordeal. Now, I think you're going to be happy to know that I've arranged to get the $5,000 for you.
Have you now?
Yes, sir. I have. Now, it wasn't easy, mind you. Took me a lot of talking before I could convince Mr. Montgomery to go along with it. But I have the $5,000.
Do you have the money with you?
What? Oh, heavens no, it's still in the bank. Now, you'll have to come to the bank with me and sign some papers before the money can be released. But not to worry. The money is there for you, and Joe Montgomery has agreed to make the loan.
I'm not signing any papers.
What?
You heard me. I'm not going to the bank to sign any loan papers.
But you must. Now, Mr. Woodward, I don't know if you understand the seriousness of the situation here. The ransom demand is for $5,000, and this is your daughter's life you're dealing with. Now, surely you aren't going to balk at signing a few loan papers, are you?
I'm not going to sign any loan papers because it is necessary. I have the money.
Woodward reached around behind his chair and brought forth a small cloth bag. He held the bag out toward Dempster.
It's all here. $5,000. You can count it.
You told me you didn't have the money.
I lied. I wasn't going to let the outlaws know I had the money until it was absolutely necessary. But it's like you said, Mr. Dempster. This is my daughter's life I'm dealing with. So I'm not going to let $5,000 get in the way of her safety.
Dempster made no effort to take the money. So Malcolm took the cloth bag from Woodward, and then he stepped down to Dempster's buggy. He held the sack up, but the lawyer still made no effort to take it.
What's the matter, Dempster? Why aren't you taking the money? Aren't you the agent for this?
Of course I will. I'll take the money.
Count it.
No need to. I'm sure if you say it's all there, then it's all there.
Count it in front of these witnesses. Mr. Woodward wants it well understood that the ransom money for his daughter's release has been given to his agent.
Well, all right.
Dempster opened the sack, took out a stack of $100 bills, and began counting them. He quickly finished and put them away.
What'll you do with that money now?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't told about this.
What do you mean? You were told to collect $5,000, weren't you?
Yeah.
They must have told you what to do with the money when you received it. Seems to me your next step is to put the money into motion. So Mr. Woodward's daughter is returned to him.
Yes. And that is exactly what I will do. Now, you must forgive me. I was momentarily fatigued by the buggy ride. Good day, gentlemen.
Where do you think he's going now?
I believe he's going to see Garneau. To see what he's supposed to do next.
Harley, looks like he's coming back from the Woodward place.
Get back down behind the crest so there's no chance of him seeing you.
Cal turned his horse and guided him back down. The two men waited until they heard the buggy pass on the road below the ridge. Then they rode back to the top and watched. They waited until the buggy was a good quarter of a mile down the road. Then they followed.
You think we're far enough back? What if he looks behind him?
That buggy's kicking up so much dust, there's no way he can see us.
The two men continued to follow. Then they saw him turn left when he reached the T in the road.
Smoke was right. He's going straight to the Frenchman's place.
You ride back and tell Smoke. I'll keep on Dempster's tail.
How did it go? Did Woodward take out the loan?
Dempster was sweating profusely, and he wiped his face with a handkerchief.
Oh, Lord. I wonder if I might have a drink of water.
Yes, of course. Mr. Reeves, get Mr. Dempster a glass of water. Would you care for a little brandy?
No. Just water is fine, thank you.
Reeves poured a glass of water from a pitcher that sat on a side table, then brought it over to Dempster.
Thank you. Oh, thank the Lord.
Now, how did it go?
He gave me the money.
Good, good. Did you explain to Montgomery that it was to be a 48-hour loan? I want to be able to redeem it and...
There was no loan.
What?
There wasn't a loan. Woodward had the $5,000 in cash. I have the money with me.
I don't understand. Where did he get the money?
I don't know for sure. But Smoke Jensen was there with him, as was Malcolm Puddle. It is my belief that one of them gave him the money.
Nailed!
You was right, Smoke. Dempster went straight to the Frenchman's place.
Is he still there?
Far as I know, he is. I left so I could come back and tell you about it. Pearly's still there, watching out.
Well, that confirms it. Garneau is the one who took your daughter. The whole loan business was just to set up a situation where you would have to pledge your ranch in order to get the money.
Who's this coming up the road now?
Looks like Curly Roper.
I think I know where your daughter is.
What? Where, Roper? Is she all right?
Look, I'm not sure of any of this, but I have a pretty good idea.
What did Garneau tell you to say?
That damnable excuse for a man didn't tell me nothing to say. I can't work for him no more, not after all he's done. Like I said, I don't know for sure, but I got me an idea that your daughter might be in a cabin up on Ajax Mountain. The reason I say this is because I know there's a cabin up there. Some of us have used it now and then. Well, the other day, a couple of us was talking about maybe going up there to do some hunting, but we was told we couldn't use it no more. Then, Briggs and Carl left with some provisions, like they was going to be gone for a long time. Turns out, they left right after that article in the paper about your daughter going to Atlanta. That didn't mean all that much to me until today. When that lawyer come to see Garneau. Reeves, he's the English feller that works as the valet, he overheard Garneau and the lawyer talking. Turns out Garneau was all upset you come up with the money, Mr. Woodward. Seems he'd set up a loan for you that if you didn't pay it back in 48 hours, he'd be able to pay it off and take over your farm. When Reeves told me that, Reeves said he can't work for Garneau more neither. Well, sir, it got me to thinking. I wouldn't be none at all surprised if Garneau didn't send them two, Briggs and Carr, out to snatch that girl, just so as you'd have to borrow that money. I can't be sure, but if I was laying a bet on it, I'd bet that Briggs and Carr are holding her more than likely in that cabin up on Ajax.
Mr. Roper, I appreciate you telling us this.
Yes, sir. Well, I just hope I'm right, and that you can find the girl and get her back safe and all. And good luck.
Can we believe him?
I think so. It took a lot of guts for him to come over here to tell us that. The question isn't whether or not he's telling us the truth. The question is whether or not he's right.
It's easy enough to find out. I'm going to the cabin.
I'm going with you.
You better let me go alone, Malcolm. This is more my kind of game than yours.
I'm going, Smoke. Whether I go with you or by myself.
All right. I see how it might be something pretty important to you. You're welcome to come along with me.
What about Pearly and me?
I think maybe the two of you should stay here with Mr. and Mrs. Woodward. If Garneau went so far as to take Lucy off the train, there's no telling what he might do next.
All right.
Who's that coming this way?
Briggs was looking through the cabin window to the right of the door. Carr joined him to have a look.
It's Templeton.
Huh. I wonder what he wants.
The two men stepped out in front of the cabin to watch as Templeton rode up.
Did you bring us any whiskey?
We're near about out.
You don't need any more. You won't be staying here much longer.
Why not?
Because it didn't work out the way Garneau wanted. Woodward got the money for the ransom somewhere else.
You mean the ransom's been paid?
Yeah.
So what are we gonna do now? We can't just let her go. Hell, she's seen us. She even knows our names.
Who said anything about letting her go?
What are you saying? We're supposed to kill her?
You got a problem with killing women?
The only problem I got is everybody in the state of Colorado be looking for us.
Templeton opened his saddlebag and pulled out two packets of money.
Here's $2,500 for each of you. That ought to be enough money for you to leave the state.
Oh, hell yeah! That'll do it! But I got a question. Since we're gonna kill her anyway, is there any objection to us having a little fun with her?
Not as long as I'm first.
It had been a 3-hour ride from Woodward's farm to Ajax Mountain. Smoke saw the cabin at the base of the mountain.
There it is.
What do we do now? Just ride up to it?
No, we'll tie our horses off here in the trees. Then we'll go up through that arroyo until we get to the other side of the cabin.
The two men worked their way up until they were even with the cabin. Then Smoke climbed up a little farther to take a look. The cabin was small, no more than 10 feet by 10 feet, with a single window in the back. There were no windows on the side.
Somebody's coming to the cabin.
Maybe we've made a mistake. Maybe Lucy isn't there.
Wait a minute. No. She's there, all right. That's Templeton.
Smoke watched as two men came out of the cabin and began talking to Templeton. They talked to him for a moment, then all three went inside.
What do we do now? Wait until nightfall?
No. I don't know what Templeton is doing here, but I don't like the looks of it. If we wait until nightfall, it might be too late. We're gonna have to go in now.
Have you got any ideas?
I can approach the cabin from the side, but before I go in, I'm going to need something that will divert their attention from the front door.
What if I break the back window?
No. I can approach the cabin from the side because there's no window. But if you come from the back, there's no cover, and they might see you.
I can get as far back as that big rock without being seen.
Yeah, that won't do you any good. You can't break it from there.
Sure I can. I not only boxed when I lived in New York, I also played baseball. If I can find the right size rock, I can throw it through the window from there.
All right. You get in position behind the cabin. I'll approach the side. When I give you the signal, you count to 5, then throw it. That'll give me the opportunity to get around front at the same time you break the window.
Malcolm climbed out of the arroyo, and the two men left to go to their chosen positions. Smoke got to the side of the cabin before Malcolm reached the boulder, so he waited as the young rancher worked his way up toward the big rock. As Smoke waited, he tried to hear what was going on inside the cabin, but the logs were so thick they blocked out any sound from inside. Lucy looked up as the three men came back into the cabin. Seeing a third man gave her some hope.
Has the ransom been paid? Have you come to get me?
Yeah, it's been paid, all right.
$5,000. I got $2,500, and Briggs, he got the other $2,500.
Then you're going to let me go?
Yeah, after.
When Malcolm nodded that he was in position, Smoke gave him the signal to begin counting. Then he moved quickly to the front of the cabin. He reached the number 5.
What the hell?
Pulling his pistol, Smoke kicked the door open. He fell to the floor inside, rolling away from the door with his gun at the ready. Because they'd been startled by the breaking window, all three men had their pistols in their hands.
Jansen!
Briggs shot at Smoke and missed. Templeton rushed by him, fleeing the cabin. For the moment, Smoke had to let Templeton go. He was busy with the two men trying to kill him. He got his pistol in line. Malcolm was running around to the front of the building just as Templeton came running out.
Hold it!
Malcolm dived to the ground and rolled, avoiding the bullet. Not until then did Malcolm pull the pistol he was carrying.
Shoot kinesthetically.
It worked!
Getting up, Malcolm ran over to Templeton and kicked the pistol away from the fallen man. But it wasn't necessary. Templeton was already dead. Malcolm looked toward the cabin. and with gun in hand, he started toward it. Inside the cabin, Smoke had regained his feet and approached each of the downed men to make certain neither of them offered any more danger. Neither did. He looked up at Malcolm, standing with a smoking gun in his hand.
Templeton?
Dead.
Lucy was sitting on the edge of the bed, a pair of wide-open, frightened blue eyes staring back at him. She was bound head and foot by ropes.
Malcolm! Mr. Jensen! I've never been happier to see anyone in my life!
Malcolm rushed over to her and began untying her. Just as soon as her hands were untied, she threw her arms around Malcolm and began smothering him with kisses.
If you folks don't mind the interference, I'll untie her feet.
Did they do anything to you? What I mean is...
No, but they were about to just before you got here.
Malcolm smiled in relief that she had not been harmed, and also at the idea of playing a role in saving her.
Well, there's no sense in being a hero unless you can be a hero who arrives just in the nick of time.
The ransom money? They got it. But even though the ransom was paid, they weren't going to let me go.
You don't even have to think about that. You're safe now. And I'm not going to let anything else happen to you.
Curly Roper was standing at the bar in the brown dirt cowboy, staring into a mug of beer as he tried to decide what he should do next. He no longer had a job, and he was pretty sure none of the local ranchers would hire him, not after having worked for Garneau. But if he was honest with himself, it wasn't just that he had worked with Garneau. Roper had been pretty much a troublemaker all along, getting into fights, sometimes getting drunk and destroying private property. There was nothing left for him around Big Rock.
Roper!
He knew at once who it was.
Roper, I'm talking to you.
Roper turned toward Jeremiah Priest.
The Colonel's not very pleased with you, Roper.
I don't care whether he's pleased or not. I don't work for the Colonel no more.
It ain't you quitting that's got him upset. It's how you done it. Word is, you went to see Smoke Jensen and you told him about a hunting cabin. A cabin that the Colonel wanted to keep private just for his own men.
What if I did?
Well, then that means that me and you are gonna have to come to some sort of a settlement.
I got nothing to say to you or do with you.
Yeah, you do. I'm calling you out, Roper.
You can call me out all you want. I ain't drawing on you. But if you'd like to settle this with your fists, why, I'd be happy to oblige you.
I said draw.
Look here, I'm taking off my gun belt, and I'm laying it on the bar.
Roper held both hands up in the air.
Now, as you can see, I ain't wearing no gun. So whatever you got in mind, you can just forget about it.
Pull your gun from the holster. I won't draw till you got it in your hand.
I told you I ain't gonna get in no gunfight with you.
Pull that gun, Roper.
I ain't gonna do it. You ain't gonna have no excuse to shoot me.
Do it.
No, I ain't gonna. There ain't nothing you can do that'll make me fight you.
Priest jerked his pistol from his holster. Skin and blood flew from Roper's left ear.
Ah!
Now are you gonna fight or not?
I told you I ain't gonna fight you!
Flesh flew from Roper's right earlobe.
Pick up the goddamn gun!
No! You people do something! Stop him! Can't you see he's gonna kill me?
No one moved. Roper stared at Priest through fear-crazed, hate-filled eyes. Suddenly, the fear left his eyes. They became flat and void, as if he had already accepted the fact that he was a dead man.
You pig-faced, scum-sucking bastard.
Roper made a mad, desperate, and clumsy grab for the gun on the bar. Priest walked over to the bar and picked up Roper's beer.
Bartender, I'll drink this. Roper sure as hell ain't gonna be finishing it.
The aroma of cooking meat wafted over the grounds as Cal and Pearly turned a quarter of a steer on a spit over a fire. The meat had been salted, peppered, and basted with a spicy sauce, and the 40 men, women, and children gathered in Malcolm's front yard visited, laughed, made comments as to how good everything smelled. There was a dual reason for the gathering. All the neighbors had come to celebrate Lucy's safe return, as well as the announcement that Malcolm and Lucy were soon to be married.
I reckon we don't have to worry none about you going back to New York now, do we, Malcolm?
Malcolm put his arm around Lucy and smiled at Tom Kiefer.
Now, if I've come 2,000 miles to find someone like this, why in the world would I want to go back to New York?
Hey, this meat's done if you folks are ready to eat.
Ready to eat? I've been smelling that meat cooking so long I'm near about ready to come over there and start gnawing on it while still on a spit.
Chris Rogan ran up to the gathering.
At least four of them. Looks like Taylor, Gately, Anderson, and Calloway. Maybe we better get our guns and get the women and kids out of here.
No, wait. They're working for Garneau, but I don't think they mean trouble.
They sure ain't riding in a way that would make you think they're looking for trouble.
The four riders came up to the yard, then stopped.
Hello, Gately. What brings you boys over here?
We've all left the Frenchman.
Gately looked over at Woodward.
Mr. Woodward, it was the Frenchman what took your daughter. There didn't any of us know about it for a while. Then Curly Roper, he found out and he quit. Then this morning the Frenchman sent Priest into town.
Priest killed Roper.
Mr. Jensen, we didn't just happen to come this way. Colonel Garneau wanted me to give you a message. After the others and I found out what happened to Curly, we decided to quit Garneau. At first, I wasn't even going to bring you the message, but we talked it over and figured you probably should be told.
What is it?
Priest is in town waiting for you. It's Colonel Garneau's intention to have Priest kill you. With you out of the way, he intends to take over the whole valley. Sugarloaf, too.
He's not going to be able to do that if I kill Priest, is he?
Well, have you ever seen Priest in action?
No.
Well, I have. I've seen some awful fast gunmen in my day. I know you're fast because I've seen you, but I feel I ought to tell you, Mr. Jensen, that I think Priest is a mite faster.
There's always that possibility.
You also should know I found out the Priest is setting himself up an edge.
What kind of edge?
Merlin Mathis. He's gonna be somewhere that'll give him a chance to take a shot at you. Plus, Garneau is in town his own self. So really, you got three of them to worry about.
What about the others? What about the army he's put together? Will they be in town as well?
There ain't that much left of the army. If Garneau gets his way and Smoke Jensen is killed, what's left of the army, them that ain't already been killed, will more than likely stay with him. But if it winds up the Priest and Mathis was to happen to get killed, I doubt the others will stay with Garneau. Since we left this morning, I can tell you that Garneau ain't got no cowboys left at all.
And you say Priest is in town now?
Yes, sir, he is.
Smoke?
Where are our manners? You men, go tie your horses off somewhere and sit down to eat with us. As you can see, we have plenty of food.
Hey, it's good, too. I done been sampling it.
We'll eat first, then I'll go into town. I don't like to work on an empty stomach.
By late afternoon, nearly everyone in Big Rock was aware of the possibility of an upcoming gunfight between Smoke and Priest. The streets were virtually empty as Smoke, Sally, Cal, Pearlie, and Malcolm rode into town. Priest was waiting in the street, a few yards from Longmont's. Smoke dismounted and walked forward.
Well now, you're here. I have to tell you, Jensen, I wasn't sure you had the guts to face me. I admire you for that. This is where it all ends for you.
It may, but whatever happens between you and me, it will definitely end for your boss.
Are you saying you're going to kill Garneau?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
Priest, what are you saying? What are you doing? He means it, can't you see that?
Garneau was standing on the boardwalk next to Longmont's.
Oh yeah, I see that. But Jensen knows that I mean it too. Go ahead, Jensen. Kill Garneau.
If he's dead, who pays you?
Oh, hell, I'm not worried about that. I already got half the money I was gonna get. But this here thing between me and you ain't about money anymore. I can't leave town without killing you. You understand that, don't you?
That's probably true. But that's your problem.
Not just my problem. We're gonna have to deal with it, both of us. Right here, right now. Let's you and me settle this thing once and for all.
Malcolm.
Yes, Smoke?
Keep an eye on Garneau while I take care of Priest.
I'll be happy to do that.
Malcolm pulled his pistol and pointed it at Garneau. Smoke turned toward Priest.
Ever since I first heard of you, I've been wondering which one of us was the fastest. I reckon we're about to find out.
Smoke, the mercantile store roof across the street.
Smoke looked around to see that Mathis was raising a rifle to his shoulder. Smoke drew. Smoke knew, without even having to look, the Priest would take advantage of the distraction to draw. Smoke fell to his stomach an instant before Priest fired. Smoke fired back. Priest caught the bullet high in his chest. Sheriff Carson emerged from Longmont's.
You're under arrest, Garneau.
For what?
For conspiracy to murder.
1 month later, Robert Dempster was tried and found guilty of fraud and grand larceny. He was currently in jail, awaiting transportation to the state prison in Canyon City. Lucien Garneau was also tried and found guilty of conspiracy to murder. He was sentenced to hang. A gallows had been constructed at the east end of Front Street, right in front of the blacksmith shop. It was visible from the window of Garneau's jail cell. On the day Garneau was to be hanged, Inspector Laurent presented himself before Sheriff Carson.
Sheriff, I am Inspector André Laurent of the French Military Police. I have tried, without success, to extradite your prisoner back to France.
Oh, well, I have to tell you, Mr. Laurent, if you were to take the Frenchman away from us now, there'd be a lot of very upset folks. You see, he's been responsible for quite a few people getting killed since he came to Colorado.
I do not doubt that, Sheriff. Before he left France, he committed murder, and he stole 2.5 million francs from the French army.
Damn! How much money is that in American?
$1.5 million.
That's how he was able to buy so much land. Yeah, I can see why your government would want him. But if it's any consolation to you, he's been sentenced to hang this very afternoon at 3. You can watch if you like. We can furnish an affidavit signed by the judge that the sentence was carried out. That should satisfy your government.
Yes, I suppose it will. May I see him?
Sure. I don't see why not. He's in back. I'll take you to him.
Laurent followed the sheriff into the back of the jail. When they reached the back corner, the prisoner was staring out the windows toward the gallows.
Hey, Garneau, you have a visitor.
When you address me, Sheriff, you will address me as Colonel the Marquis Garneau. You may hang me, monsieur, but you will not rob me of my honor.
Vous ne pouvez pas être dépouillé de l'honneur, Mouchette, parce que vous êtes dépourvu de tout honneur.
Laurent looked at Sheriff Carson.
I will translate for you, Sheriff. I told him he cannot be robbed of honor because he is devoid of honor. He is neither colonel nor marquis, and his name isn't Garneau, it's Mouchette. Pierre Mouchette.
Qui êtes-vous?
I am Inspector André Laurent of the Gendarmerie Nationale. I have come to see justice done for the murder of Sergeant Dubois and for the theft of 2.5 million francs. Did you really think you would get away with it, Mouchette?
I did get away with it. There would be no guillotine for me.
The guillotine is quick and painless. Hanging is a much slower and more agonizing way to die.
Involuntarily, Mouchette lifted his hand to his neck.
Will there be some sort of reading of the pronouncement from the gallows?
Yeah, the judge's order and authorization have to be read.
Please, Monsieur Sheriff, when you read the orders, do not dishonor France by calling this impostor a colonel and a marquis. And could you add that he is also being executed for murdering an innocent soldier who is under his command?
I don't know how the judge is going to like that, but I'll do it for you.
As he stood on the gallows floor, his arms tied to his sides, his legs tied together, Mouchette looked out at the faces of the people drawn to the event. Some of them reflected a sense of fear and horror, others morbid fascination, and still others an obvious show of satisfaction that he was paying for his crimes. Near the back of the crowd, he saw Amy, the whore from the Brown Dirt Cowboy, and he recalled the night he spent with her. He smiled and nodded. Amy looked away. He had seen his coffin when he climbed the steps, but it was beneath the gallows floor now, and he couldn't see it any longer. Below, a camera had been set up on a tripod. A priest approached him.
Mr. Garneau, I am Father...
My name is Mouchette, Pierre Mouchette.
The priest looked toward Sheriff Carson, who was also standing on the gallows floor.
I don't understand. I thought the man I was to minister was named Garneau.
Garneau was his assumed name, Father.
The priest nodded, then turned back to the prisoner.
I'm Father Sharkey, an Episcopal priest. May I minister to you?
I am Catholic, Père Sharkey. Or I was when I was a boy and actually went to church.
It's the same God.
Yes. Well, it's a little late for all that, isn't it?
With God, time is both instantaneous and eternal.
Fine, go ahead.
O Father of mercies, and God of all comfort, we fly unto thee for succor in behalf of this thy servant, who is now under sentence of condemnation. The day of his calamity is at hand, and he is accounted as one of those who go down into the pit. Under God's gracious mercy and protection, we commit thee. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace, both now and evermore. Amen.
Sharkey looked over at Sheriff Carson and nodded, then walked 13 steps that led down to the ground. The sheriff looked at the crowd.
I am instructed to read the death warrant issued by the court of Eagle County, Colorado, for the crime of accessory to the murder of Humboldt Puddle and others, and for the murder of Sergeant Antoine Dubois, Pierre Mouchette, also known as Lucien Garneau, is to be hanged by the neck until pronounced dead by the attending physician in pursuance to the instructions contained in this warrant. Let no one present question this warrant.
Sheriff Carson stepped over to Mouchette, holding a black hood in his hand.
Are you ready?
Suppose I told you that I needed 40 more years before I was ready. Would you wait?
I'm afraid not.
Before you put it on, let me find Laurent in the crowd. I know he is here. Where is he?
He's standing just to the right of the foot of the steps.
Laurent, tell those with whom I served that I died like a soldier.
No, monsieur. I shall tell them that you died like the villain you are.
Mouchette watched as the hood came down over his face, realizing that as of that very second, he'd seen the world for the very last time. He could see some light coming through the hood, but nothing else. He felt the rough texture of the rope when the noose was fitted over his head, and he felt the knot pushed up against the back of his neck.
May God have mercy on you, Mouchette. I sure as hell don't.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, 40, Strike of the Mountain Man, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2012, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Christopher Sheeran, James Keegan, Jonathan Watkins, Tim Getman, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Drew Copas, Tim Carlin, Christopher Graybill, Stephen Carpenter, Michael Glenn, Bradley Smith, David Coyne, Alexander Strain, Thomas Keegan, Eric Mesner, Tim Pabone, Michael John Casey, Colleen Delaney, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Harris, Danny Gavigan, Joe Brack, Thomas Penny, Nick DePinto, Ken Jackson, Evan Casey, Dylan Lynch, Lily Beacon, Scott McCormick, Nanette Savard, and Casey Platt. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Thomas Hogan. Graphic audio sound design by Thomas Hogan and Allison Thomas. Additional music by Thomas Hogan and Johann Detweiler. Smoke Jensen theme music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Strike of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles and Sidewinder series, as well as the Great American Western series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
Well, who the hell are you?
I'm the law. And if you pull that pistol, I'm gonna shove it up your ass and pull the trigger.
Graphic Audio presents Shootout at Broken Bow.
Put that thing back in your boot. It's time for you to call it a night. Get your money off the table and clear out of here. Maybe you'll have better luck tomorrow. Kind of an unfriendly way to greet customers.
Well, I'm sorry, mister, but the past few days around here has got a lot of folks kind of edgy when a stranger walks in.
You stay away from my wife!
I don't think so.
Oh, no! Oh!
Shut up!
He was here. Him and three of his boys.
How long ago?
He left here 2 nights ago.
Did he say where he was headed?
Nope, and I didn't ask him.
Did you see which way he headed when he left here?
Yeah, I watched him leave. He started out to the north following Boggy Creek.
So you found us. What are you aiming to do about it? Seeing as how it's your gun against our four.
Well, that's just it, damn it. If you'd gone to hell back to Texas after you robbed that train at Durant Station, it wouldn't have caused me no problem. But now I ain't by myself. I expect in about 10 or 15 minutes there's gonna be somebody on that hill above us that ain't looking for no payoff.
My God, somebody's gonna pay for this. If I have to ride into Fort Smith and shoot that judge right down in his damn courtroom. It pleasures me to know that you're looking out for us.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.